36. Bella was making plans to pay an unscheduled visit to the Fountainheads when she learned that Jim Chisholm was already on his way down. She caught the maglev and met him in Underhole, in a secure part of the plaza. The area had been cordoned off by an impromptu wall of flickering haunts, joined hand in hand like a chain of paper men. Beyond the cordon, the usual thin straggle of passers-by watched the proceedings uneasily, unpleasantly aware of how dire things must have been to merit a visit from Chisholm. Bella could still feel it, too. Her old friend no longer belonged amongst his own people. Of all of them, of all the dead who had been revivified, he was the only one who had never really returned from the grave. Svetlana had been right all along, she thought peevishly. They got back someone, but it was not the man they had known on Rockhopper. It wasn't just the fact that some parts of his mind had been filled in using structures salvaged from Craig Schrope, although those instances when the Schrope patterns broke through were unsettling enough. There was also an alien aura around him, like a haze of static electricity. She did not fear him for a moment, or doubt that he meant well. There was still goodness in him. But it was the shrewd and analytic goodness of the paternally wise, which could sometimes feel very much like coldness. His eyes were serious behind the old half-moon glasses he still wore. "It's bad, Bella."
"Your news or mine?"
"Both, I suspect. The musk dogs are playing true to form. Sooner or later, they were bound to tempt one of you into making contact. Short of imposing martial law, there's not a lot you could have done about that. McKinley's very agitated, as you can imagine. I just hope the situation isn't irremediable."
McKinley said there was no safe level of exposure to musk dogs.
"McKinley was right. But if you act now, you may be able to salvage something."
"I don't know how much damage she's already done."
"You'll find out sooner or later."
Chisholm removed his half-moon glasses and wiped them on the beige sleeve of his gown.
"You've played things very well up till now. Not issuing a public statement was exactly the right thing to do. Let the musk dogs think this is all officially sanctioned."
"What next?" she asked.
"Reason with Svetlana if you can. Persuade her to back out of further negotiations. If the musk dogs get the message that there's nothing more to be gained here, they may cut their losses and leave."
"I'll do what I can. Maybe I should send Ryan. She's more likely to listen to him than me."
"That sounds wise. I'd offer to talk to her myself, but if she's bought the musk dog line, my protestations won't count for much."
He tucked the glasses back onto his nose.
"Besides, there's another matter currently pressing on my attention."
"Your bad news," Bella said.
"The musk dogs have allowed the uncontained to penetrate an adjoining volume. Doors are open clear through to 5 light minutes. They're on their way."
"This can't get much worse, can it?"
"It's about to. The exiled Whisperer returned to the embassy. It's even more certain that there's been some kind of deal between the musk dogs and the uncontained. There may have been nothing accidental about their leaving those doors open."
"And they still have no idea what the deal's about?"
Chisholm was grim-faced. The Whisperer had obtained some new intelligence. It's beginning to look as if the deal might have something to do with access to Janus.
"Tell me what you know."
"Janus was a machine designed to bring us here and keep us alive during the journey. It contained enough energy to move itself across interstellar space at relativistic speed, with a little bit set aside for emergencies. Now that we've arrived in the structure, its job is done. We may not have noticed it, but the energy reserves in Janus are finite and dwindling."
"It's dying," Bella surmised.
"Running down. We could keep tapping power for decades, but sooner or later there won't be anything left. That's what happens to all the moons that arrive in the structure, in the end. They run dry like old batteries. But in structure terms, we've only just arrived. Our moon still has a pretty hefty charge inside it."
"Enough to do what?"
"If the Whisperer's intelligence is good, the musk dogs may be trying to tap all that remaining energy in one hit."
"I don't get it. Why?"
"To blow a hole in the structure," Chisholm said quietly. "To blast a way out to the external universe." Bella shivered at the implications.
"Can it really be done?"
"It's been done, according to structure lore, but only once, and nothing was ever heard from the culture that escaped."
"At least they tried. At least they didn't accept being penned up in this thing for the rest of time.
It may not be that simple. None of the cultures has any firm data on conditions beyond the structure. Until you get out there, you won't know what you're going to find. A cage can also be a form of protection.
Those who want to stay would always have that option, Bella said.
Remember what I said. Nothing was ever heard from the escapees again.
I don't get it. If someone already blew a hole in the wall, why can't the musk dogs use that one?
The walls heal, Chisholm said. After a week or two, they're as good as new.
Conflicting emotions racked Bella. She liked the idea of finding a way out of the structure, even if it cost them Janus, but not the fact that she had no control over whether or not this happened. What would it take for the musk dogs to achieve this?
They'd have to reach deep into Janus, access the right machine layers. The musk dogs aren't clever enough to figure out what to do on their own, but they'll have had help from the uncontained.
How long do we have?
No guessing. Could be hours, days, or even longer.
And then Janus goes Nova.
Something like that. Needless to say, the musk dogs won't want to be inside this chamber when that happens. They'll use their passkey to seal themselves into the next chamber.
We, on the other hand, will die.
If we're still here when it happens, I wouldn't put much on our chances.
Okay, I've heard enough. We need to stop this before it starts.
Not quite as easy as it sounds, Chisholm said.
Why not? The Fountainheads can take out the musk dogs, can't they?
They could, but they'll need something more solid than the Whisperer evidence before they move, or they'll risk censure from the rest of the Shaft 5 Nexus. Whisperers haven't been the most trustworthy of cultures in the past, and there's always the possibility that this might be a ploy to provoke action against the musk dogs.
But you said the musk dogs had bought passkeys from the Whisperers.
It's all only intelligence, Bella. There isn't a single piece of information that isn't questionable on some level.
So you're just going to sit tight and let us die?
I didn't say that. I said we'd need something more solid than what we have so far. Don't assume that McKinley and the others don't care. They're already doing everything they can to protect you from the uncontained.
I'm scared, Bella said.
So am I. More scared than I've been in a long time.
He touched her hand tenderly.
I need to be with the Fountainheads now. They've become very good friends, and I can't let them stare into that abyss alone. When the uncontained come, I want to be with them, whatever happens.
What should I do about the musk dogs? Can't you give me something?
I wish I could, but I've seen our history. I know what would happen.
I understand, she said resignedly. I know what happened after the cutoff, Jim. I know what that knowledge almost did to us. For the first time in years, she knew she had the advantage of him. She felt cruel and delighted and sad at the same time.
You can't possibly know, he said.
I do. Someone told me.
Who?
A friend called Chromis Paskflower Bowerbird. He closed his eyes. She sensed the racking of ancient, inhumanly vast memories.
The politician? The Congress of the Lindblad Ring?
She found me. I know everything, Jim. He looked at her, amazed and rueful.
I had my suspicions when you said that you knew this wasn't the Spica structure. How could you know that unless someone else had told you how far we'd come?
I think I'd trust her to help, if things turn bad.
She was considered wise in her time, but you don't know Chromis Bella. You know a thin shadow of her, like a death mask. It may mean well, but...
She may be all we have. Bella stood before the memorial cube, in its armored laboratory under Crabtree. It felt as if many months had passed since she first touched it. After Chromis had entered her head, she'd had no further cause to visit the lab. She had ordered a halt to all studies into the cube, dispersing the scientific team onto other projects. The analysis instruments had been cleared away. The cube was no longer rotating on the inspection platform. There was no allure to it now. No sense that it sought her touch. It looked no more alive, no more purposeful than a cut and polished motherload of coal. I always wondered, Bella said, as she stood with Chromis and Axford before the embossed face with its Da Vinci motif, what would have happened had I been dead, if the cube was programmed only to react to my DNA and no one else's?
Oh, that was no great matter, Chromis said dismissively.
Frankly, we thought the chances of you finding the cube were effectively zero. We always assumed it would be one of your distant descendants who made the lucky find. But who's to say my DNA would have been passed on? What good would the cube be to them if they didn't have the means to open it? We didn't think it would prove an obstacle for them. We assumed they'd keep your blood, or at least the relevant DNA sequence, as a kind of heirloom. It wouldn't have cost them much to preserve a fragment of you in case it was ever needed again. Would that have fooled the cube? It wouldn't be a question of fooling it, Chromis said, simply of letting the cube decide whether or not it had arrived in safe hands. If it detected something that corresponded to your DNA, that would be deemed good enough. Bella pondered the matter. What if they hadn't kept my DNA? Axford looked on, amused and intrigued by the one-sided exchange. They'd still have been your descendants. With the right methods, they could have worked their way back to your sequence. I still haven't had children. There's time, Chromis said. But even if you don't, your people care for you, Bella. They'd keep something of you, trust me. Look at us. We managed to find a sample, after all. I've been wondering about that. It was tricky, Chromis admitted. Your DNA sequence would have been stored in many places at the time of your departure. Medical databases, insurance databases, and so on. But by the time the Congress of the Lindblatt Ring agreed upon the memorial project, those sources were long gone, so we had to be more inventive. How, exactly? We excavated the Sinai Plainum on Mars, where your husband died. Garrison? She asked, astonished. But they never found the wreckage. Chromis could not help but look slightly pleased with herself. We did. It was buried deeper than anyone looked, that's all, and spread out over a rather larger area than they anticipated. When we found Garrison's remains, they'd been under Martian soil for 2 complete cycles of attempted terraforming, but there was still enough to work with. But I'm not Garrison, she said. No, but you did give him a lock of your hair. It was still there, Bella. He'd carried it in his suit. It was in his hand, safe inside the glove. It survived across all those years, all that history, waiting for us. My God. He'd taken good care of that lock of hair, Bella. He must have loved you very much. Later, she watched the Fountainhead Embassy break apart into 100 glassy shards. It called to mind the sudden, explosive scattering of a school of brilliant fish at the first glimpse of a predator. The shards rearranged themselves into loose, shimmering associations, and raced away from the iron sky in the direction of the end cap. In less than an hour, they would reach the door leading into the adjacent chamber, ready to make a stand against the uncontained. Bella thought about Jim Chisholm, or whatever he had become, and imagined him journeying towards that point of engagement, out of a sense of honor and obligation to his alien friends. It was brave, and it moved her. But at the same time, she wondered how far from humanity he had come that he could feel such compassion, maybe even love, for the Fountainheads. Bella was grateful for the gifts they had bestowed upon her people, and reassured to a point by the knowledge that they were a known and trustworthy quantity, but her feelings were an ocean away from compassion. She felt too small, too fragile, too finite ever to imagine loving the Fountainheads. It awed her to think that Jim Chisholm had closed some of that distance. It also took him further away from her, into a territory of the heart for which she had no maps, no compass, no desire to venture. She wished all of them well, but she could not say, for sure, how sad she would be if Chisholm did not come home. She knew that she had already said goodbye to him, and that the farewell had happened a long time ago. Instead of sadness, she felt something utterly strange. An emotion lost to her for so long that it tasted exotic, like an unfamiliar spice, but it was not completely unknown. It was something she had known once, long ago. It was peace of mind, and it had nothing to do with Jim or the aliens. Across all those years, all those decades, she could finally think about Garrison without feeling a hitch in her thoughts. The knife in her stomach was gone. They had argued over the Earth-Mars link before he left on his final mission, but she knew now that he had forgiven her. Even as he went down, with his ship frying around him in the fires of re-entry, he must have had time to think about her, about how she would feel when she heard of his death, and he had clasped that lock of hair in his hand as a sign that it was all right, that the argument was forgotten, that he still loved her. He could not send her a voice message. But he had sent her something tangible, hoping that it would be found. And for 18,000 years it had lain under Martian soil, as the rains came and went, as seas and forests swept across the plains and then retreated, as the skies turned to a cloud-flecked blue and then back to a wind-torn, cloudless Martian ochre, as that cycle repeated, as empires rose and fell and humanity pushed out into the stars and became something strange and wonderful, of which Chromis was a part. And then the message that Chromis herself carried, this single redeeming fact, had itself crossed an incomprehensibly vaster span of time and space, a gulf against which 18,000 years was no more than a moment. It had found Bella. The message had been delivered. The loop closed. The ironic thing was that for all the future wisdom Chromis carried with her, it was this single instance of human contact that mattered most to Bella. She felt as if she had been stalled all this time, blocked from moving on. All those relationships that had never worked out, all those men she had never allowed close to her because she felt the twisting of that knife. The lock of hair said it was okay. She didn't have to forget Garrison, but at least she could let go and know that when they'd really parted, when the universe had taken him from her, they'd still been friends. The calm she experienced was like the easing of seismic stress after an earthquake. It was delicious, and she would have liked nothing more than to take the time to enjoy it, to feel the possibilities opening before her. But the easing came just as her world was about to unravel. She would be doing very well if she was still alive by the end of the day. That was the universe. You could beat it once, you could float a message in a bottle across half of eternity, but the universe would always find a way to have the last laugh. Chisholm called her on the embassy channel.
"We'll be at the end cap in 30 minutes, Bella. Nexus sensors place the uncontained in the next but one chamber. They're moving quickly, and it looks as if they're tooled up for a fight. Will you win? We'll give them a bloody nose they won't forget in a hurry. But if we don't make it, if the other Nexus elements don't get here in time..."
Chisholm trailed off, but somehow found the strength to continue.
"I can't promise you much. We've still left a small emplacement behind on the Iron Sky."
"I know." Bella had seen it.
"There's room in it for 500 people. If you can get them inside, we can at least move them to safety."
She started thinking about what it would take to empty Crabtree and every other settlement on Janus.
"You mean into the chamber that's soon going to be crawling with uncontained? Since when does that count as safe, Jim?"
"If Janus goes up, you'll still be better off in a battle zone than inside the present chamber. At least the Shaft 5 Nexus will be able to shelter you."
"If they show."
"They will. The Nexus take their responsibilities very seriously. As soon as the engagement starts turning our way, as soon as it becomes clear that the Nexus has the upper hand, I'll return to Janus and do what I can to help."
He narrowed his eyes at her.
"Are you all right, Bella?"
She nearly laughed. "The world's going to a hell in a handcart. Why shouldn't I be all right?"
"It's just that you look different."
"In a bad way?"
"No," he said, "not in a bad way at all. You look like something good just happened to you."
"It did," Bella said. "Something beautiful. Now let's hope some of my good luck rubs off on the rest of us, shall we?" The new sky hole was perfectly circular, drilled to the same dimensions as its counterpart over Underhole. A chunk of musk dog machinery, a lander-sized thing like an off-cut of meat wrapped around a carburetor, followed Svetlana all the way in, trailing a whipping, wire-thin tendril that reached all the way back to the gristle ship. It was still with her as she neared Junction Box, at which point it swerved aside and vanished through a hitherto undiscovered aperture in the spike and machinery, something that all the patient years of human scrutiny had failed to illuminate. In Eddytown, Svetlana expected to find that all hell had broken loose, but a review of the shipnet feeds showed nothing out of the ordinary. She unsuited and asked Denise Nadis to supervise the transfer of the production files into her secret forge vat. Within an hour, something miraculous and strange was assuming existence within its red belly. The maglev arrived from Crabtree. Svetlana half expected Bella to step out of the train, but the figure that emerged was the boy-like form of Ryan Axford, alone save for a protective haunt. Svetlana had him brought to the negotiating room, with its panorama of Martian landscapes.
"You can leave the haunt outside," Svetlana said. "I won't hurt you. We've always seen eye to eye."
"What happened to you?" Axford asked.
Svetlana rubbed a latex-gloved finger against the mark of ownership the musk dog had secreted across her forehead. It felt ridged and leathery, like scar tissue or a hardening scab. Beneath it, her skin itched terribly. She wanted to rip the chemical marker away, rid herself of any lingering trace of alien contamination. "Nothing much," she said.
"Does it hurt?"
"It itches, that's all. The musk dog assured me no harm would come of it. Can you smell it?"
"No," Axford said.
Svetlana smiled equivocally. "Some people can, I think. It must depend on something very subtle in the human olfactory system. To the musk dogs, the smell's like a neon sign. It tells them all they need to know."
"Can it be removed?"
"I could tear it away now if I wished. There'd be some damage to the underlying tissue, but nothing that wouldn't heal in time."
Axford couldn't take his eyes off it. "Then why don't you?"
"Because if I did, that would be the end of my dealings with the one that negotiates."
"One of the musk dogs," Axford guessed.
"It owns me now while we trade. If I return to the ship without this mark of ownership, or if the musk dogs obtain evidence that I've had the mark surgically removed, that would be very damaging for the pack status of my musk dog."
"What would happen?"
Svetlana smiled slightly. "He'd be reprimanded."
"I wouldn't want that." "You shouldn't have done it."
"I took an initiative. From where I'm standing, it looks as if I did the right thing. They've given me more in one day than we've got from the Fountainheads in the last 10 years.
Maybe there's a reason for that.
Maybe the Fountainheads don't care to see us wipe ourselves out with technologies we barely understand. Maybe they have a sense of responsibility."
"That would be Bella's line, of course. That doesn't necessarily make it wrong."
"There's another equally valid view," Svetlana said. "The Fountainheads have nothing else to offer. Certainly nothing that we can use. Yet they still need Janus. So they keep us here, denying us access to the rest of the structure.
They've warned us of the dangers lying beyond the end cap.
That isn't quite the same thing."
"Have they given us a passkey?"
"You don't give razor blades to a baby."
"Then it's time we stopped acting like babies."
"That's why I went up there today, Ryan. It wasn't to spite Bella or to punish her for what she did to Perry. It was to move us forward, to do something."
"Well, you certainly did that."
The woman and the boy-like man studied each other as curtains of dust flung themselves across the arid, salmon-red landscape of Mars. A golden dirigible, emblazoned with a crescent and star, made a perilous docking with one of the high minarets of the walled city. Svetlana said, "I was expecting more of a reaction from Bella."
"Such as?"
"I don't know. A police action against Editown, perhaps? Arrest and detention of known Barsegian loyalists?"
Axford looked disappointed.
"Bella's shrewder than that. I thought you'd have realized that by now."
"She sent you for a reason, I suppose."
Axford studied her coldly. "A long time ago, Bella was warned about the musk dogs. The Fountainheads told her to expect their arrival one day. They also told her that the musk dogs would exploit the slightest visible rift in our society. That's why Bella worked so hard and for so long not to alienate you. She did everything in her power to bring you back into the fold, Svetlana. There was no exile for you. She even had you invited to Takahashi's party.
All that just in case the musk dogs showed up?
Basic human decency had something to do with it as well." Svetlana scoffed. There was nothing decent about what she did to Perry. "You'd love to think that was purely personal, wouldn't you?"
"Wasn't it?"
"I think Bella came very close to letting Perry go. I'm certain that would have been her preferred option. She likes and admires Perry." Axford's attention continued to drift to the mark on her forehead. He had, Svetlana thought, a child's inability not to stare. The whole episode hurt her more than you'll ever know, Svetlana.
"Lecture over, Ryan? Or was that the reason you came?"
"I mentioned the need for visible unity," Axford said, unriled. "Bella still feels it's important not to show the least sign of discord to the musk dogs. That's why she's made no announcement denouncing your action, or the imposition of a police state or mass arrests."
"I don't follow."
He appraised her. "Bella has a proposal. She will disregard what you have done. She will pursue the matter no further and make no effort to clamp down on your sympathizers. You will not be punished, and you may continue your activities such as they were before this day. On, needless to say, one condition."
"Let's hear it."
"You report back to the musk dogs, by radio or in person, Bella doesn't care. Presumably you told them you were entitled to negotiate on behalf of the entire colony?" Svetlana shrugged off the question.
You maintain whatever lie you told them, Axford continued. The Musk Dogs will go on thinking we sent you, and you will tell them that you wish to curtail all dealings with them. Whatever deals you've made, whatever you've given them or received from them, all that becomes void. If that means giving things back to the Musk Dogs, we'll pay that price, just as long as they leave us alone.
It's too late, Svetlana said. They've already cut through the sky. Or didn't you notice?
We noticed. We noticed the thing that followed you in as well. The Fountainheads are taking great interest in it. According to Bella, it may not be the simple energy tap the Musk Dogs told you it was.
And Bella would know, would she?
The Fountainheads have intelligence. The intelligence says that the Musk Dogs may be trying to destroy Janus.
As if that made any sense.
It'd make a lot of sense if you were interested in blowing a way out of here.
She laughed at him.
Very good, Ryan. Handy how this intelligence arrives now, just when Bella needs something on me.
So you don't believe it?
Bella's entitled to believe what she likes. I know a spoiling action when I see one.
I don't think the Fountainheads would lie about this.
Svetlana felt a sudden overwhelming need to connect with him, make him see her side of the argument.
Ryan, listen to me. I was up there. I've seen what the Musk Dogs are like. They're unpleasant.
She fingered the scent mark.
I didn't like them, in case you were wondering, but I sensed that all they cared about was business.
Business can kill if you're on the wrong end of it. I thought we learned that lesson on Rockhopper.
This was a price worth paying. They're going to give us real power here. We'll be players, finally. I want to get out there, Ryan. I want to see what the rest of the structure looks like. I want to meet the Spikens and ask them some hard questions.
He looked at her with bruising unfamiliarity, as if they had never known each other.
I'm glad you gave the matter that much thought, at least.
She stood up sharply. We're done here. My answer, pretty obviously, is no. All that remains is to find out what Bella plans to do about it.
Axford stood up as well. He had to lower himself down from one of the high chairs around the conference table. Despite his stature, Svetlana still found that he had the physical presence of an adult man, combined with a gaze that penetrated through to her hidden frailties, laying them open for slow, measured, clinical inspection.
It's not too late, he said.
For what?
To step back from the brink.
Bella's forgiving. She always has been.
Give her my regards, Svetlana said.
They talked via shipnet. Svetlana stared at Bella with a defiance that cuts across 50 years, back to the darkest hours aboard Rockhopper.
Let's keep this brief, Svetlana said.
I thought you'd listen to Ryan, Bella said. We both owe him so much after all this time. He's been kind to both of us.
This wasn't about me and Ryan, and I did listen.
Ryan told you what the Musk Dogs really want with Janus.
He told me a story, and he believed it, I'm sure.
You may even believe it.
That doesn't make it any more convincing.
The thing they sent back with you is going to destroy Janus.
So you say.
Jim Chisholm believes it too.
Chisholm's part of the problem. Who knows how much of Terrier Boy they put into his head?
I heard you patch things up with Shrope before you sent him into the Fountainhead ship.
Svetlana shook her head. He volunteered for that mission. It was one good deed after a lifetime of being a creep.
Think whatever you want about Jim, but I know he isn't lying. I'm so sure of it that I'm already putting together an evacuation plan.
That news, for a moment, broke through Svetlana's glaze of indifference.
You're evacuating Kreptri.
I'm evacuating Janus. There's no official word of it, since I don't want mass panic. But when the time comes, I'll have things in place to get all of us skyside in a matter of hours.
Maglev to Underhol, Underhol to what's left of the Fountainhead Embassy. The Fountainheads will take care of us until we get back on our feet again. There are only 500 of us, so it's still doable.
Send me a postcard.
Listen to me, you self-centered bitch. I'm evacuating the whole place. That includes Eddytown. That means your people. That means you have an obligation to help.
Svetlana looked as if she had just been slapped hard across the face.
Help you?
Help us all. You need to get your people to Crabtree so that we can shuttle them to Underhol and the Embassy. We can't afford to wait until I begin the mass evacuation. We have to start now, which means you need to invent a pretext to get your people here.
I get it. I clear Eddytown, then you send in the apparatus bailiffs and take it from me.
You still think this is just about me and you, don't you?
I outflanked you with the Musk Dogs. You can't deal with that, so you're trying to spoil things with some fear-mongering shit about them blowing up Janus. You want to talk about fear? I'm scared, Svieta. So is Jim. So are the Fountainheads. You're messing with stuff you don't understand, and it's about to blow up in all our faces. Damn right we're fearful. Then I guess you only have yourself to blame. All those times when you could have shared the big picture with me. You want a piece of the big picture? Okay, here's one. The Musk Dogs left doors open behind them. They've allowed the uncontained to leak through. Bella watched her old friend's face, alert for the slightest tick of recognition. Or didn't they mention the uncontained? Svetlana lied badly. I don't remember. Let me fill you in then. They're a hostile intelligence, worse than the Musk Dogs. They've already wiped out another culture that was at least as advanced and clever as us, and they're on their way. When the Musk Dogs blow a hole in the wall, the Uncontained will use it to escape as well. There's no telling what kind of damage they'll do before they leave, just to make sure no one follows them. Something of that got through. Bella saw it, the slightest crack of doubt in Svetlana's armor. What's done is done, Svetlana said. If the Musk Dogs left doors open, the damage was done long before I spoke to them. But you can do something about it now, Bella urged. I'm pushing ahead with the evacuation, but there's still a chance we won't need to leave. Go back to the Musk Dogs. Tell them the deal is off. Tell them to take their fucking machine out of Janus and leave us alone. Tell them to leave, and to shut the door on the way out. Across the ship netlink, Svetlana eyed Bella with a guile that froze her blood. They wouldn't need to, she said. I have the means to make a passkey. Bella remembered the Whisperer technology. Something the Musk Dogs gave you? Something we negotiated for, Svetlana corrected. I have the Forge Vat construction file. Are you making it? No, not yet. Other things to attend to first. You can't trust the file. The Musk Dogs aren't expecting to do repeat business with you. It could be anything. I'll take that chance. Even if the file is valid, you're attempting to make something alien in one of our forge vats. Doesn't that give you the slightest pause for thought? So you don't want the passkey? Of course I want it, Bella said urgently. But I want to make damn sure it isn't a trick. How would you know? Wang's good. He's done nothing but eat and dream forge vat files for 48 years. So I hand it over, just like that. Please, Svetlana, let me have the passkey file. Without talking to the Musk Dogs, you won't have the faintest idea what to do with it. Jim can show me. He'll know. In the meantime, all you have to do is tell the Musk Dogs that negotiations are suspended. And then what? Then we'll talk. Not good enough. I'd want guarantees up front, starting with your resignation and Parry's immediate release. You won't let that go, will you? I dealt you a strong hand when I brought Jim back from the dead, Bella. It cost me Crabtree. I don't blame him for that. I don't even blame you for it. But I'm not letting this one slip. If the passkey means so much, you'll do what it takes. Bella nodded, accepting that this was how it must happen. She could already feel 35 years of rule slipping through her fingers, and she knew that not one instant of that could be measured against the preservation of her people. They're coming, Svieta. Whatever you want to do with me, decide quickly. We need to start making that passkey. At the very least, it'll let us get out of the chamber before Janus blows. Will you resign? Whatever you want, just hand over the file. Svetlana must have considered her options before the meeting, for she answered quickly, with an assurance that left no room for negotiation. I'll ride the Maglev into Crabtree. I'll be wearing a suit, and I'll have the file with me. You won't do anything to threaten me. If you do, you'll lose the pesky. I understand, Bella said. When can I expect you? Svetlana glanced at a watch. It's 10 now. I'll need a little over an hour to prepare. Then I'll catch the train. We can be at Crabtree 30 minutes after departure. How does noon sound?
Noon sounds fine, Bella said.
Something emerged from one of the blank faces of the memorial cube. It broke the smooth surface as if stepping through a curtain of thick black rain and then stopped. It was humanoid, only a little larger than a man. The glossy, sharp-edged surfaces of its midnight black carapace suggested some close-fitting martial armor. It had no head, only a kind of evil-looking hatchet, too flattened ever to have contained a human skull. In place of hands, it had perforated-edged foils, thinned to a devastating sharpness.
Bella barely dared speak.
What is it?
An instrument of local government, Cromis said. We call it a reeve. It enforces the policy decisions of the Congress when they need enforcing, which isn't very often, thankfully.
It's a machine.
Cromis nodded. Little more than a hollow shell of femtotech, with all its intelligence crammed into a few millimeters of skin.
What can it do?
Anything. A reeve can shape itself into any enforcement device for any legally sanctioned purpose.
What could it do against Eddytown, if I sent it in?
Bella had already informed Cromis of the worsening situation. After a certain amount of time, Cromis said, there would be no Eddytown. But one reeve can only do so much. It cannot replicate. It's forbidden to transmute local matter except to facilitate self-repair. But the cube can make many reeves. This unit only masses 50 kilograms. The cube could produce a regiment of 1,000 reeves before its own mass was depleted by one quarter. They would already outnumber the entire human population of Janus. If that were deemed insufficient, I could issue an emergency directive and instruct the cube to convert its entire mass into reeves.
There would be 4,000 of them.
Bella looked at the cube. What would happen to you, Cromis?
I would continue to run on the reeves until they returned to the cube.
I wouldn't notice any difference, provided a significant number of reeves did not come to harm.
How can one of these ever come to harm?
It probably won't, not here, provided we move quickly, before the musk dogs give Svetlana weapons that might trouble the reeve.
Cromis paused. But you needn't worry about me. I am more resilient than you can imagine.
I had to be, to last all this time.
I'm glad you found me, Cromis, no matter how long it took.
I'm glad as well, the politician said. I just wish there was a means to send a message back to those obstinate fools who nearly blocked the memorial project.
Not enough funds, they said. A pointless gesture, doomed never to succeed.
Belts need tightening, perhaps in another 10,000 years. Build a monument instead, or a civic amenity, a nice ornamental fountain.
Cromis snorted her derision, as if that was ever going to stop me.
You were right to push.
I was, wasn't I?
Axford coughed a little boy's cough. Are you going to tell me what that thing is, Bella? Or do I have 20 guesses?
It's a tool, Bella said. A robot.
Cromis says it will be enough to pacify Eddytown, to seize control. There'd be a good chance of obtaining the passkey by force if Svetlana has already copied the file into the forge vat.
Just that one robot?
Cromis can always make more of them.
How many more?
Lots.
Good. Then let's send this one in before things get any worse. We know she has a forge vat, and we can be pretty sure she's brewing something unpleasant in it.
Bella looked back at Cromis. How long would it take for this thing to reach Eddytown? She'll be leaving on the maglev in under the hour.
A breeze touched Bella's cheek. The reeve had flicked to the other side of the room with no hint of intervening motion.
Reeves usually need the element of surprise to enable effective pacification, Cromis explained. It reshapes itself to move from point to point, like water being poured from one glass to another. In vacuum, it's even faster. It could be inside Eddytown within 5 minutes, if you wished.
The horror of what she was on the verge of doing was enough to make Bella feel sick.
How would it operate?
It can stun or incapacitate, Cromis said. If it does not encounter significant opposition, there need be no casualties.
But it will encounter opposition. They'll already be expecting a police action. They won't have weapons, yet, but they'll have drills, cutting torches, mining armor.
Then there may be casualties.
Reeves know that when they encounter significant resistance, it is better to accept a small number of deaths before stray fire causes many more deaths and injuries. But they never kill needlessly.
Bella turned to Axford. It can take care of Eddytown, but there'll almost certainly be deaths.
There'll be deaths if Svetlana moves against Crabtree, Axford said. Even if you give her what she wants, even if you hand over the high hab in exchange for the passkey, there'll still be people who won't go easily. You've earned their loyalty, Bella. They won't go without a fight, no matter what Svetlana might think.
I'll surrender rather than see more blood spilled.
Cromis interrupted gently.
Your primary concern, Bella, is not political control of Crabtree, but intercession to gain the passkey file. Then you must erase all the other musk dog construction blueprints before they do any damage.
I know. I just... She shook her head, incensed and saddened. How did things go from being so good to being so wrong? It only seems like yesterday that Svetlana and I were sitting together in the Arboretum, putting the past behind us. Now I'm wondering how many of her people I can get away with killing.
You didn't ask for this situation, Chromis said. She went to the Musk Dogs. Not you.
You can't tell me what to do, can you? For all your wisdom or the thousands of years you have on me. You can't and won't do that.
I'm sorry, Chromis said. I hope I've been a friend to you, albeit for such a brief span of time. But I cannot be your master.
You are the captain, Bellalind. This has to be your call.
Bella returned to her office, seeking a few minutes of calm alone with her fish before she had to meet Svetlana. In the office, with the door closed, she could pretend to herself that there was no crisis, and for a moment she allowed herself that solace. Then Nick Thale knocked on the door and let himself in.
This had better not take long, she said, knowing that the train was already on its way from Eddytown, knowing also that Thale would forgive her the discourtesy. He passed her a flexi, letting Bella read the display before he said a word. She studied the data and then looked into his old man's face.
I don't get it. Why are you showing me lava lines?
I'm showing you patterns of traffic, Thale said, with the slightest hint of reproach. Notice how the activity's hotted up during the last 3 hours. The lines are busier than they've been since the sky went up.
Bella was about to say something when Thale jabbed a finger at the display and made a change.
Here's seismic data, he said, and here's a plot of grav field variations at the main eddy points. Every parameter we can measure is spiking at 5 or 6 sigma outside normal variations.
He paused, then said solemnly, If Janus was a brain, and we had it in a scanner, I'd say we were looking at an epileptic seizure. As one of her inner sanctum, tasked with preparing the evacuation, Thale knew all the salient details about the Musk Dogs and their intentions regarding Janus.
You think this is it? Bella asked warily.
Something's happening. You either believe in coincidences, or you conclude it has something to do with that thing that came back with Svieta.
Bella closed her eyes, willing the world away, but the world had no intention of leaving.
She opened her eyes again to face a stubbornly present reality.
The Musk Dogs have started the countdown.
It's time to say goodbye to Janus, Nick.